Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team.
Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by a true professional and fellow podcast host, Chris Hartvigsen. And I just about screwed that up, but I think I pulled it off a little bit. Chris is a friend of mine and the founder CEO over a pretty cool tool that you might have heard me talking about on the show a few times. He's the founder CEO of Duly.ai. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. You stuck the landing on the last name.
Nailed it. I practiced all day and all night for the last week, and I'm still a bit iffy, so I think maybe there's something wrong upstairs.
All good.
Right on, man. Today, we got you on the show not to talk about Duly, though I'm sure I am a fan, so we might go explore that a little bit, but really want to talk to you about the product, like how you guys sell, and because I think it's a really interesting model. I've talked to David Cancel and about how they do the PQL. You guys are going a little bit deeper into product-led enterprise sales. And so today we're kind of exploring the PQO in this enterprise sales model. And so before we jump in here, talk to me about when I'm talking about product-led sales, what does that even mean? What are we talking about here?
Yeah, the world has flipped a little bit. And if you look at some of the hottest stocks and hottest private companies that are out there right now, a lot of them are product-led solutions. Zoom, Slack, Calendly, Expensify, and a whole series of others. Those are all great product-led solutions. Product-led solution is something that a user finds to address a user's individual pain. And over time, it proliferates across to other users within their organization or within other organizations and converts into a sold solution at some point after the user has started using it. So you think about Calendly or Zoom. Zoom's a great example. If we were on a free version of Zoom right now for this call, and we're in COVID time, so there's a lot of people that have free versions of Zoom. When it hits 40 minutes, it shuts off. If you're a product-led solution like Zoom, that's the moment of pay. Particularly if I'm on a good call with you, and let's hope this is going to be an awesome call, 40 minutes out, I'm ripping my credit card out to keep that call going because I don't want to have drop off. So that's what you'll see in most product-led solutions is something where there's a paywall that gets you into the superpowers of that platform.
I love it. I think Dropbox is one of the original examples of, I can't remember where I've heard the story. Maybe it was at Saster, maybe it was their podcast, but their enterprise sales process was calling up the CTO and saying, or whoever's in charge and saying, hey, you have 80% of your employees are using Dropbox. Would you like an enterprise account? It's going to cost XYZ, but your team's already using it. This will give you better control.
Yeah. And here's some of the incremental benefits you'll get as an administrator and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, exactly. And so what is the product-led? How is Duly a product-led organization from a sales standpoint?
Yeah, we're a little unique in that we are what I'll call PLG to B2B. And what I mean by that is in our world, we still go after the end user and want to get end users to fall in love with our product. And they do. So, it's designed to be simple. It's designed to really fit the need or fill the pain of an end user in sales or in customer success or other roles. And so what happens is We use viral components within our product and within our marketing to try to get people to engage with us as a brand and as a solution. As people start to discover our product, and I'll speak about our product as though it was any other product, they'll start to realize some of the benefits that they're getting, and it'll be something that solves an immediate pain that they have. And the moment they, for example, hit sync on a note, that's an endorphin rush that is hard to replace with an enterprise platform. Enterprise, let's think about some enterprise solutions that are the exact antithesis of that. You've got the SAPs and the Salesforces of the world that have big, bulky solutions that are bought by the VP of sales or sales operations, and they're implemented across the organization, but it takes a lot of horsepower to get those solutions implemented and a lot of decision-making and maintenance and all those different things. A PLG solution can never be that, or it will never proliferate the way you want it to. It has to be dead simple to set up. It has to be dead simple to start using. and it has to solve, again, that end user pain. So that's how we start our sales process.
Perfect. And just to walk back to that acronym, you said PLG B2B, lots of letters there. Talk to me about, so what is PLG?
PLG, product-led growth. And okay. B2B, I think everybody knows what B2B is. But the reason I say the word PLG to B2B is in sales, it's really, really unusual for a salesperson to want to pay for some of their own technology, particularly when you tether into some of the other technology in the business. You know, again, Calendly is something that somebody might pay for on their own. Why? Because it can be used personally and doesn't necessarily need to integrate that deeply in with other parts of the org other than your GCal. We plug into something that's a little bit more central to the sales org. And so what will end up happening is over time, we will end up in a sales cycle, a traditional sales cycle, but it usually takes a while for that part to happen. That's the B2B component that I was talking about.
Gotcha. So at the end of the day, your closing process is still a traditional like solution type sale.
Yeah, I would say that it is. And the only difference is that we've probably carpet bombed a little bit more so that everybody's a little bit more aware of what we do and how we work and more aligned with it. So, you know, by the time you've written the check, you don't have to worry about adoption because it's already adopted. Mm.
Gotcha. So a little bit closer to that Dropbox model, but you're still, okay, cool. I follow you. It's an interesting mix. When we were doing the pre-interview, we were talking about sort of PQLs, product qualified leads versus product qualified opportunities. Mm-hmm. And when I was talking to, we had the guys from Drift on, we did a webinar together a year and a half ago, I think. And they were talking about PQLs. And so it's top of the funnel. It sounds like, you know, they were getting value out of it, but they weren't getting like the users weren't getting the full value. It also wasn't something where like the users themselves, like Drift isn't a Dropbox model where your salespeople are going to be installing Drift on your website, right? This is more of a, so in this model, I guess your product is really more of a, like a lead magnet.
To an extent, yeah. And so that whole PQL to PQO thing that you're talking about, what we recognize pretty early is a single user might find our product or a product like ours, and they might use it individually ad nauseum and fall in love with it and really perform better because of it. Great news for that individual. But if it doesn't proliferate to other people in the organization, they're probably not inclined to pay for it, and they're probably not inclined to try to get their boss to pay for it. What we noticed pretty early was the way that our product tended to perform the best is when more people in the organization discovered it. So again, you think about like the viral loops that you want to put into the product offering and into your marketing messaging and your referral streams and all that kind of stuff. So the more people that would discover it, the better your chances of closing a deal were. If I had one person using a product at Nike and I went up to their VP of sales and said, look, this is working really well for John over in sales, they'd be like, whoop-de-doo. But if I said the entire sales department has adopted and you can talk to any one of them, they'll all tell you that they fall in love with what this does for their day. That person's going to write the check because he knows or she knows that it's going to lead to a happier, more performant sales org.
Gotcha. And so when we're looking at, if we step aside from the product a minute and we look like, let's drill into the sales process. Mm-hmm. It sounds like we're flipping the buying influences around. Cause normally like I grew up Miller Hyman and I'm always thinking economic buyer, technical buyer, you know, user buyer, manager buyer. But in most of those models, the user buyer is not the most important person. The user buyer is usually downstream, at least, you know, when I was growing up in sales, there was no real focus. And I think Miller Hyman, I wouldn't say they crap on the user, but it's kind of just thrown in there. It sounds like this is totally flipped in your model.
Well, so the way that the traditional Miller Hyman approach works is that you have a technical buyer and an economic buyer who both have the right to veto a deal and the ability to veto a deal. And that still is going to be the case in a product-led solution for sure, because ultimately somebody has to write the check. But we've evolved from this, and Colin, you and I go back a little bit, we've evolved from this world where everything went through the CIO. The CIO era was king. And eventually the executives became powerful enough that they would be able to make decisions without going to the CIO and asking for permission because things moved to the cloud. Now we're in this end user era where the end user is ultimately the adopter of the technology anyway. So rather than wait to find out if they're going to adopt something after you've paid, there's preponderance of choice now that will give you the ability to know if something is going to be adopted before you've paid, right? So the end user has become incredibly empowered in that journey. They're tired of using shit software. And the reason for a lot of that, frankly, is this, right? You think about your device that you have on you for, well, north of 12 hours a day. That device has all of the apps on it that are consumer quality apps that you enjoy using. Anything that you don't use gets thrown off your phone or gets put onto page two of your apps. And because you have become accustomed to the quality and the experiences of, in the apps that are on your phone, you're expecting that same experience or wondering why the hell it doesn't exist in your work life. So now, yeah, the end user is the proliferator, the proponent, and the discoverer of good solutions because they're tired of enterprise legacy crap.
Fair. I'm curious how, so I follow you that, follow you so far. How does this impact your sales process? Like if I'm a salesperson sitting here going, you know what, so what, Colin brought his friend on here. What's the learning? What's the takeaway? If I'm a salesperson, how do I get the, where's my opportunity here?
So the opportunity is to flip the script, find the pain in the organization before you reach out to the person who writes the check. And that's pretty easy to do, right? If you go, the people in an organization that have the most pain are the people that are doing the work, not necessarily the people that are just looking at the report in the ivory tower, because somebody else has built that report for them, right? So the people that are in doing the work, the salespeople, the customer success people, the IT developers and software designers and all of the different parts of the organization, the people that are running payroll, they're doing the work and they're experiencing the product firsthand. If you talk to them, you will find every single problem with what they're doing today. And then you can flip the script. And hopefully we get a chance to do this later, but you get to flip the script, talk to the sales leader and go, hey, did you know that across your team, the behaviors that people are struggling with are A, B, and C? Did you know that those behaviors are costing you X, Y, and Z? I've discovered it. You don't even need to take my word. Talk to your team. Your team will tell you. And at that point in time, you end up with somebody that's like, it's hard to argue, mm-hmm. right? The team is happier, though the data is better. We are performing better since this has happened. Why wouldn't I do it? I literally had one early on in sort of the life of Dooley. We had one client that phoned me up. He was VP of sales. And he said, I don't know what the hell you've done, but every single employee in my sales pit right now has our product on one screen and yours on the other. And he goes, they all love it. How much is it? Let's just get this done. It was like, I'll take a deal like that any day of the week, right? Because the users had just flexed their muscle and said, we need this. This is making our lives better.
It's really interesting. I had Phil Keen on the podcast, episode 21. So 100 and,
that was awesome. Yeah.
129 episodes ago, something like that. Gosh. Yeah, as of today, I think we maybe launched our 151st. So at the end, we're going to do a shot of 151.
And, awesome. I've got my the bar behind me.
Yeah, exactly. On the back bar there. Yeah. But he was talking about, you know, we talked about Aaron's version of mapping calls, and this is so similar. You know, with the mapping calls, you go high and you're trying to map the organization. You're talking to the executives, you're trying to learn things. And then you go to your target buyer who's, you know, an adjacent executive. And what Phil said was very similar, but it said flip the script. Even if you don't have, you know, a product led, sales organization, you can still call the end users that are impacted by your solution and understand what their pain is, ask them what your pain is, then use that to inform your approach with their boss.
Yeah. What cold emails do you like better, Colin? I get 30 to 50 a day. The ones that have flipped the script and the ones that talk to the pains and challenges that they know I have versus the ones they think I might have perform way better for me.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm in an interesting spot right now where I feel like, to me, it's less about the quality of the outreach, and it's more about the quality of the targeting and the product market fit.
Exactly. Right.
And so if you can communicate product market fit, hey, I think this is relevant because we do something awesome and new, right? I think hands down, if you're an SDR at one of those organizations, you've already won the game, right? You're already going to get an A+. If your product, if your organization doesn't have that level of product market fit with that specific market, and or you have it, but you don't know how to communicate it, or you haven't been trained on it, I think you're SOL.
Yep. And I think that there's still some really important truths to the economic buyer and the technical buyer, because they can still kill deals, right? So behind any good product-led solution, there have to be core tenets. It has to be secure, because your technical buyer will wipe it if it's not secure. It has to address the good technical needs of the business. So the technical needs of the business could be, it updates this stuff in this platform, or it meets these technical needs that we have as a executive team. That stuff still has to be there. And the economic buyer can still look at it and go, no, too expensive. But the reality is, if you position it well, if you position it so that you are talking about the pain of the end user and parlaying it into the benefit to the organization, the economic buyer is never going to get in the way.
Fair. And I guess I imagine this would change your entire go-to-market approach, because you're no longer just going direct, like to the very, very top of the organization and saying, hey, let's push this down. Your marketing, I'm guessing, is more focused on user activation. And then I imagine customer success plays a role in making sure that people are coming on board, using it, and loving it.
Yep. Yeah. And customer success is another way of saying sales, but it's a different type of sales. It's a different discipline. If you look at Slack mastered the whole model of getting customer success involved and helping to drive adoption and feature addiction. And once you get to a point where there are things in a product that you can't live without, again, in Slack, once you get to 10,000 messages, at least in the early days, that was your trigger point to go, oh, I need to look back at a conversation that we had, 10 weeks ago, and I can't because it's past 10,000 messages. Now it's about integrations and a bunch of other stuff. But customer success played a huge role in converting you from free to paid. But I think there's another piece to that puzzle. And customer success in our world plays a massive role in terms of getting users to have some sort of an epiphany. Now you can all do a lot of those epiphanies through Intercom or Drift or other platforms as well. You can have like a guided tour of your product, so to speak. But customer success plays another really, really important role. And I've only realized it more so since I've founded my own company and, have, a hand in all sorts of parts of the business. The stories and the anecdotes and the wins and the victory laps that are happening because of your product, those stories are all channeled back to the person who is talking to the users, either post-sale or post-activation. And that should help to form your narrative and your targeting moving forward in a very, very big way. When I was at my last company, I was there for 9 years. We had a client that, as a Canadian, was pretty awesome. It was the National Hockey League. And I'm still friends with the buyer to this day. Still exchange nice emails throughout the year.
You're just looking for tickets, let's be honest.
Always looking for tickets. Side note, I did actually sit in the commissioner's seats for a game of the Canucks against the New York Rangers once, which was really cool.
That's pretty sweet.
And this might get cut out, but I got the opportunity to use the same bathroom that Brian Adams was in, and we peed right beside each other. Amazing.
Did you have any pee anxiety? I feel like I'd be looking over and being like, I don't know if I'm qualified to pee next to this man.
Yeah. Well, the funny part was, you still have your bathroom etiquette of looking straight forward. But I mentioned that I'm from Vancouver too. And he's like, oh, cool. I'm like, yeah, we used to listen to music when we were growing up. It was quite funny. Total side story. National Hockey League. The stories he used to tell me post-sale, because we did become friends, about how they were using the product were tremendously powerful for me and led to Major League Baseball signing, National Football League signing, the NBA signing, NASCAR, Ultimate Fighting, rugby league down in Australia, and a whole series of others. And that was because I had this one really clever story, or a couple after a while, that I could say to these other leagues, hey, FYI, this is what's happening over there. And I know that this is important to you as well. Just it's a foundational piece.
And I think that's such a critical piece here. And I love the fact that even like you're leveraging your product to take on some of that early, even like customer lifetime, customer success process. You're letting users get so deep into your product because they're using it for free that you can come to, normally you have to, you know, sign a customer, take the chance of it being successful. The reference or your champion being, you know, still there so they can give you a good reference. You can get a case study. That all is like a 12-month, 18-month process if we're dealing with like previously fairly long sales cycles. But I think the best part now is that the users are actually in the product. And so how does your sales team, how do they extract this from customer success? Do you have somebody who's in charge? Do your salespeople talk to CS? Do you talk to CS? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah. So we very intentionally layered CS into the sales story. So when we are in the midst of a sales process, we already have all these great anecdotes and stories that we have at our disposal. We also, and this I think is really important, and I don't know how many organizations do this. We, in the early days of Duly, we mandated that 5% of everybody's time would be spent engaging with customers. It helps you define the purpose of your role, right? I don't care if you're in finance or if you're in HR or engineering, you're going to be engaged with customers to a certain degree. Now because as you get bigger, 5% starts to become a bit much, you're almost overwhelming the customers. We've tempered that back a tiny bit, but everybody has a part to play with the customer. It helps you to understand why you're building a feature. It helps you understand how that feature should be used by other people when it's being rolled out. And equally importantly, when you're customer success, it helps you to understand how we can convert more deals moving forward. And they really do understand and consume the secret sauce, the tonic that your product is delivering to your customer base. So to ignore the messages that they have is crazy. In my last company, we were walled. We didn't get any access. It was like, oh no, this is private information. This is too important. And we're like, okay, well, what if we relax it a little bit and we just talk? Like, I have this customer in professional sports that does blah, blah, and blah. And even then there was a lot of resistance, and it took like a sea change movement for us to flip it so that customer success was aligned with sales and helping to invigorate sales in the sales process.
Yeah. It does. I love that you've got everybody involved in the customer success organization. They sit within the sales organization. And it sounds like it's a lot more open that, you know, if I'm in sales, I can go and tap on, you know, so-and-so's shoulder and be like, hey, let's, you know, talk to me about, you know, what you're seeing. I think if I'm in sales now at an organization, and I'm listening to this podcast and we have a product team or a customer success team, that's the next individual that I'm taking out for coffee, you know, or hanging out with on a Zoom and just saying, hey, let's tell me what you're hearing, tell me what you're seeing. Because if our organization isn't supplying us with those stories, these are the people that you can pull them from. And they have such a wealth of information that can be make or break for your sales process.
Yeah.
I remember when we were first starting Predictable Revenue, it was called CARB at the time. And there was this one month where just sales clicked. And looking back, it was case studies. Suddenly we launched, I think, 3 case studies in a month. And then there's that social proof that everybody was looking for. They're like, hey, that sounds magical. Show me, you know, 3 to 5 customers that will stand up and say, hey, this is, you know, these guys are really awesome. And having those stories really empowered our salespeople to be telling those stories. And so now they're not talking about features or benefits. They're talking about customer stories. And that's exactly where you want them talking about.
Yep. So for sure. I want to point out one last thing.
Go ahead.
I want to point out one last thing on the product-led growth stuff, which is when you're doing product-led growth, the leadership team will often see what you sell as a nice to have. And the people that are using it will see it as a need to have. So it's really, really important for you to understand how to bring that need to have story to the nice to have buyer and make sure that they understand why it's important. Equally, I will say this, if you're a salesperson today and you know that your VP of sales has a dashboard on their screen with a bunch of bar graphs, to the salesperson, that's a nice to have. They don't give a crap. It doesn't help them do their day. So yep. Again, and that's why adoption always has suffered historically with enterprise stuff. So sorry, that was a bit of a diversion. I just want to make sure that we clarified that for the audience.
Of course. One of the things that I was thinking just to bridge the gap here is, you know, we've been talking about customer success. I'm thinking if I'm a salesperson sitting in a Dooley chair, can I just tap into my, can I tap in and start sending people drift or intercom messages, like users, be like, hey, I'm, you know, I'm one of the sales guys, I'm trying to sell your VP. Can you help me find out where, like, who to talk to?
I'm starting to go that creepy. I'm starting to see it more and more people hitting the intercom button on our website and doing it to us, which I find to be creative and innovative as long as they have a good story. You know, if they lead with who is your VP of sales or who is your CEO, we stonewall those conversations pretty quick. But if they lead with an interesting story, I'm always willing and open to at least pop a conversation.
And so facing it the other direction, you know, do you have the ability to, does your sales team have the ability to, you know, learn from your users how to navigate the organization? Are there opportunities where they can, talk to me about that.
Yeah. So maybe that's one point that I didn't make clear in the PQL to PQO journey. The PQL to PQO salesperson is highly, highly engaged because they want to convert something to an opportunity. And we do that very intentionally because we want people to understand how the mechanisms of the organization that they're going into, because it will make the next part of the sales process super easy. You're already vetted, you're already validated. So a lot of the onboarding that we'll do and whatnot is all concierge. And we do that not just because it's going to help to drive adoption and lower your support costs, but also because it's going to help you to close the deal with like way more information than you otherwise would.
I think in the world of the product qualified sale or product led sale, you've got all this information, you know, and if they're in your tool, they're less likely to be in your customer or your competitor's tool. And so phenomenal.
Yeah. It is pretty cool. And you know, the nice thing is again, with product qualified or product led growth, I should say, the neat thing is you always know the moment when somebody has bought in because you can see it in the metrics. You know, you don't need to listen to the language necessarily. And you do to an extent because we have customers that apply for jobs at our company for crying out loud. It's awesome. And you know that they're super bought in and super in love. And when you get like five of those at a company, you know that it's going to convert to a deal. But there are little things that we look for in their user journey that we're like, okay, you've done this five times. You're never turning this off. How do we get you to the next level? How do we make you a virtuoso? How do I make you look like a hero to your boss for bringing this in the first place? And how do we get six more people like you at the company?
It's one of the, I mean, that's a phenomenal way of looking at it. I think one of the things I'm curious about is like, how is your sales process changed in light of COVID? We're recording this in the beginning of May.
Yeah. I mean, we're 2 months into this fun. It's changed a lot. So the one thing that we recognized early is that usage didn't die in our product at all. And user signups didn't die. Virality from one user to the next changed a little bit because again, there's no longer the over the shoulder look and hey, what's that you're using? Well, I'm using this here because it's giving me these five benefits. Salespeople, more so than most right now, are totally under the pump. They are seeing their colleagues in many cases get laid off. I mean, imagine if you sold into hospitality or travel or tourism or anything like that right now. Ticket sales, you're not doing anything to drive your number up. You might be nurturing deals and trying to keep them alive, but you're not doing anything to drive revenue across the line, realistically, unless it was already bottom of funnel. So reps are finding the product on their own because they want to spend less time doing work that isn't going to be focused on selling. And that's been our big discovery. But the buyer persona has shifted temporarily, and maybe, well, we'll see, might change permanently, up to the manager who sits between the VP of sales and the salesperson, who is also incredibly lost right now. They don't have a good story to tell to their VP of sales about forecast because they've lost the day-to-day connection with their team. They don't have a good story to tell down to their reps because they're not seeing their reps on a regular basis and don't have good visibility into their reps on a regular basis. So what we're noticing is user adoption and usage, all-time epic highs. Check writing, maybe a little slower than it was before, for sure. The managers are speaking up more than they ever used to and getting engaged in the deals more than they ever used to. So that part has been good.
That's encouraging to see. We'll get to the chance, get your chance to sort of talk about Dooley in a minute here, but the way that Dooley spread app predictive revenue was, I was playing with it. Sales manager came over and was like, what are you doing there? I'm like, oh, I'm typing into Salesforce. He's like, that's not Salesforce. I'm like, oh yeah, I created a template so that, you know, I wanted to. One of the things we always sucked at, and we had not complaints, but customers brought it up, was that they would have a chat with an SDR and then they'd get on the phone with our AE and the SDR and AE would have a chat, but then the customer's feeling like they're having the same conversation with the AE that they had with the SDR. And we had built things. Initially, we were using Google Docs and we would share a Google Doc. And we were doing that, like literally we had Salesforce and we were copying, pasting Google Doc links. This was a few years ago into like we're pasting them into Salesforce because then you could see all the notes from the conversation and there were no notes in Salesforce. And then I think the thing that I really appreciate was the fact that we were able to like plug all of our questions that the SDR was asking the prospect. We plugged those into Salesforce, but then they didn't have to fill in 20 different fields when they're on the call. They just type. That's what I like about it. I'm going to get to my favorite segment, which is cold call me. I've already done a little bit just because I am a fan. I have talked about it on the show before and we do actually use it. I'm not getting paid. Though Chris did offer to torture me on his podcast with hot wings. I do love hot wings. I am not going to accept your invitation of the bomb. I am just not that strong, nor, you know, I do like hot stuff, but I don't want to have a physical reminder of what I ate hours after I ate it. I'd say generally, that's not a great sign for me.
Fair enough. Only the brave need to apply. That's for sure.
That's fair. Hey, I'll come on the show, but
I'm calling you very, very courageous for making a decision not to come on the show.
Hey, I'll come on the show, but I'm not drinking Da Bomb like that. That stuff's crazy. Okay. That's hilarious for celebrities. Nobody cares to see me sweat in my bedroom with the fan going, coming out of my eyes.
Fair enough.
So favorite spot, cold call me. So tell me about who am I as a buyer? Who's your buyer? And, you know, what kind of organization am I in?
All right, let's go. Twilio is doing pretty good these days. I think their stock was up 46% today. And for those that don't know Twilio is basically the backbone for a lot of the video conferencing solutions and whatnot that you see out there, the telephony solutions that you see out there. So I'd say that they're in a pretty good place today. So if I was going to cold call somebody, I'd cold call them. Let's go for the head of sales engineering at Twilio.
Okay. Sounds great.
All right.
Ring, ring. Hey, this is Colin.
Oh, can we just do a side on this? Sure. I want to talk to you before going to this. I want to tell you this really funny story. So when I was interviewing for a job, for a guy I still talk to this day, sales leader in Vancouver, we did the simulated cold call and he goes, okay, let's start the cold call. He goes, ring, ring. And I go, hello? instead of actually thinking that I was calling out, I thought he was calling me.
Did you get the job?
I got the job. I don't know how, but yeah. Anyway, ring, ring. Hey, Colin, it's Chris.
Let's try again. There was traffic. I got distracted. Let's try again.
Yeah, no worries.
Ring, ring. Hey, this is Colin.
Hey, Colin, it's Chris from Dooley. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Hey, listen, I've been talking to some of the sales engineers on your team over the last few weeks, and it seems like a few of them are really struggling with their Salesforce hygiene. And as you know, Salesforce for the sales engineers is something they spend a lot of time in. What I learned from your team is that they're mostly updating their notes for their calls in like a Google Doc or in Evernote. And it seems like it's a bit disconnected from the CRM, which is causing them to do double entry and causing a lot of frustration. Just wondering, I know that you used to be a sales engineer once yourself. How did you cover off on that stuff when you were an SE?
Yeah, I'll admit it drives me crazy. As much as we put the fields in Salesforce, they don't get filled out. And so,
yeah.
And I get all these random links with different formats, different data. Everybody's, data is all over the place. And so I do have sales opportunities data, or I have opportunity data, but everything else is stuck in this free form text.
Must cause a lot of frustration across the team and up to yourself to try to report on that information when it's not where it needs to be.
So outside of this role play, it does frustrate me, or it did frustrate me big time. So I'm not just trying to play up because I like the product. It did actually drive me crazy when people were sticking, when I'd see like the notes and it'd be a note and it'd be a link to a Google Doc. And I'd just be like, I won't say their name, but I just like scream, like, come on.
Please, you can do better than this. Yeah. Well, look, we see this all the time. And usually when we talk to an organization, some people use Evernote, some people use Notepad, because frankly, they're trying to get by and do their job as efficiently as they can. So they're feeling pain on a regular basis and trying to find a way to circumvent it. We built Duly to solve the pain for your team without it disrupting where the data needs to live. In fact, we've made it easier for them to put it there. We typically start with sales engineers at most organizations because you tend to support a lot of sales reps who also struggle with the same problems. And there tends to be a lot of complaining back and forth about bad communication of information. Wondering if we can hop on a call, do a demo, and show you how Duly might transform your team so that you have the visibility you need moving forward.
It sounds great, Chris. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's Duly, Dooly.ai. Took me way longer than I'd like to admit that it was sort of a play on words, Duly Noted. I didn't get that for a long time, but I'm not going to admit that publicly. If people are looking to get in touch with you, they got questions about the product-led sales, product-led enterprise sales, or they just want to check out the product, what's the best way for them to get in touch?
Yeah, Chris with a K, K-R-I-S at Dooly.ai. That's Dooly.ai. You're welcome to message us on intercom on our website, www.dooly.ai. Or if you want, we are a product-led solution. Top right corner, if you're using Salesforce, just click the sign-in button and we'll be able to concierge onboard you just like we do everybody else. You'll fall in love within minutes.
That's fantastic. Thanks so much for coming on the show. You got a podcast. Is it out yet, or it should be coming out soon? So give us the details.
Yeah, we just launched it. It's called Hot Sales Talks. And I don't know if you caught the story earlier, but basically what we do is we have celebrity sales leaders coming on board and we're having conversations with them while eating hot wings with different levels of heat. And we start off mild. And by the end of it, we're in a desperate frenzy for any sort of liquid that will cool our tongues. I just did one today before this call and I went through like half a roll of paper towel blowing my nose because I was dying on the call. And I thought I was going to stop breathing at one point in time. I am not the person to be hosting this, but I have been nominated. Lots of fun. And so Hot Sales Talks will be available from our website as well.
Right on. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Chris. All right. We'll see you all next week. Cheers.